Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. If you're looking for something to do after the holidays, a museum visit is a great way to spend time with families and friends. Here in Tulsa through the holidays, Gilcrease's K Walking Stick Retrospective is on display, and Philbrook's Museum Confidential continues. But just 2 hours east in Bentonville, Arkansas, Crystal Bridges' major exhibition by American modernist Stuart Davis is in its final days. This exhibition, organized by the Whitney Museum and the National Gallery of Art, features over 80 works by this distinctive 20th century painter that reflects his interest in jazz, advertising, and all the hubbub and chaos of mid-20th century. Crystal Bridges curator Margie Conrads says that Davis's work is singularly recognizable. Each piece is unmistakably Davis's vision. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents Stuart Davis in full swing through January 1st. My guest today is the Director of Curatorial Affairs, Margie Conrads, who previously served as Deputy Director of the Amon Carter Museum in Fort Worth and spent 20 years at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art before moving to Crystal Bridges, where she serves as the Director of Curatorial Affairs for the museum. She joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Margie Conrads, well, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, hi, Rich, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, congratulations on a wonderful exhibit, which will be closing very soon at Crystal Bridges. And for those who are not familiar with the name Stuart Davis, I think when you look at his work, you'll see a familiarity because his art has been so influential on later generations, not only in art, but in illustration, advertising, and throughout pop culture. For those who don't know Stuart Davis, why is he important?
Stuart Davis is an artist who worked from the very beginning of the 20th century up until his death in 1964. And that body of work that he created over more than five decades has influenced multiple generations of artists. Davis used words and text in his art from very early on, even early illustrations that he did. And one can see even the roots of pop art, for example, in his paintings.
And of course, he also is this sort of one artist that encompasses sort of all sorts of changes in the 20th century. When he first starts painting, he's very much late 19th century, early 20th century, and you can see him working out his art through that first half of the 20th century, which encompasses so many changes.
His life saw changes across every spectrum. When Davis was born in the last decade of the 19th century, it was still the horse and buggy era, and he lived to see the beginnings of space travel. So it gives you an idea of just all the many changes that he experienced. And he took in all those transformations and reflected them in his art. And that is true as far as American art and art worldwide goes as well. He comes out of that 19th century tradition. The first works of art that he created were drawings for illustration. He comes from a family of artists. His father was art editor for newspapers. And he lived again through, for example, the rise of abstract expressionism and, as I said, pop art. So he contributed to many of the changes that occurred in American art in the first six decades of the 20th century.
And you mentioned his parents. His parents were a good friend of a number of the painters, which would later become known as the Eight. And actually, when you look at the very first pieces that he created, he could have been an ashcan painter. He looked a lot like his mentor, John Sloan, in some ways, in some of his early works. And in fact, there's two works that sort of give you a sense, because really this show picks up with Davis, his style, once he's really discovered his style. But there are two works early that give you a sense of where his art background came from.
Yes, Davis called John Sloan his second father. He was close to him both personally and professionally. And both Davis and Sloan took many of their cues from Robert Henri, who was probably Davis's most influential teacher. And Henry charged his students to go into the real world and to paint what they saw and to not sugarcoat anything. And so raw subject matter, street scenes, everyday life, and with a very painterly aggressive style is something that in the first decade or so of the 20th century really sounded a new voice for American art.
Now, those two works, one is a pencil drawing, which gives you a sense of his strong skills as a draftsman and illustrator, I think. And then the other is a self-portrait, which again reflects that ashcan philosophy, I think.
Yes, and you see the early drawing from 1916, which is called Atlantic City Night, and it shows a street corner where you get views not just of the exterior, but into both the lower floor and the upper floor of a building. And you see all sorts of things going on. You see a couple arguing, and on the outside you see a couple of lovers. You see a man peering in the window. And he was just capturing a dark night in Atlantic City and what he saw going on.
He saw the famous Armory Show in 1913, which brought European modern art to American shores for the first time. This must have been tremendously influential, because you can see this change that happens fairly soon after that show in his colors and also the way he's portraying his subject matter.
What's interesting about Davis is that he not only saw the Armory Show, he participated in it. So in 1913, he was still a very young man. He was barely 21, and he had five works of art in this show, which, as you said, was transformative for American artists. And from there, he took many different aspects, but particularly the bright colors that he saw in French art, as well as some ideas about how to push subject matter towards abstraction that really, over the next decade, percolated in his artistic pot, if you will, and then particularly with a trip to Paris in the end of the 1920s. He then sort of, the foundational structure and subject matter and colors of his art were set for then him to develop over the next three decades.
Of course, that Paris trip created a number of very influential works in which he took Paris street scenes and changed them into this technicolor, almost flat perspective. You talked about how Henry said that you need to get out into the streets and see the streets. He's still doing that, but he's transforming these landscapes into, in many ways, they're almost like theatrical sets where everything's smashed down to two dimensions. And that's how it's always struck me. What is your assessment of those landscapes, of which there are a number that are part of this show?
What's interesting about how Davis develops his art is that between 1913, the Armory Show, and 1928, when he goes to Paris, he pushes his work to as close as abstraction as he will get. Though Davis himself would say, if he were with us, that his work was always based on real objects and things that he knew and everyday life. What he does through that period, during and after Paris, is that he does exactly what you were saying, is he starts playing with the relationship between the illusion of three-dimensional space and the two-dimensional flatness of the canvas or the piece of paper that he is working on. And particularly with the Paris paintings, you do really see him developing a sense of space that relates to what we think of as a stage-like design. Design was incredibly important to Davis in his art, and he was a tireless worker in composing his art. So he started with drawings. He then sometimes would have had in a number of intermediary studies that could be in watercolor, they could be in oil, and then he would get to the finished painting. Another thing that you see happening after the Paris trip is you see a cycle of imagery, shapes, colors that are always being rearranged, redefined, and that connects very much to something that he became very interested in as a very young man, but particularly connected to in Paris, and that is his love of jazz. And if you think about how jazz has compositions that riff, that turn on their sides and heads, themes and variations, Davis in many ways is the painting version of jazz.
So there's a theme, and then it's variation or improvisation, and then theme again. Yeah, and you see that. There's a one of the nice things about the show is you see several versions of a theme. I'm thinking of the Egg Beater series. And getting back to your earlier point where he's working to the point of abstraction, you see this in this particular series where he's taking a still life and basically moving things around, figuring out how these geometric forms work, and basically playing with them.
Still life provided for Davis, particularly in the 1920s, before he went to Paris, a vehicle to understand shape and design in relation to each other. And the Egg Beater series is an excellent example. The story goes that he actually had the opportunity to concentrate on his paintings in that year. In 1927-28, Davis was given a monthly stipend by his patron, Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney. And that allowed him to concentrate on painting in a way that he'd never had the opportunity. Throughout his life as a young artist, and even through the 1930s and the Depression, like many artists, Davis struggled to make ends meet. So a stipend from a patron was a tremendous gift. And with the Egg Beater series, Davis said, whether it's exactly true or not, we don't know, but that he took an egg beater, a fan, and a rubber glove and nailed them to his kitchen table and painted them for the rest of the year. And so what you see in those paintings, and you can see vestiges of what might be a fan blade or the fingers of a rubber glove or the beaters of an old-fashioned hand egg beater. But he uses those shapes to really help himself understand how form, shape, and space and color can work together. So he's in a way very methodical in his process, but the results don't feel methodical at all, but rather magical.
My guest today is Margie Conrads, the Director of Curatorial Affairs at the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Crystal Bridges exhibition Stuart Davis in Full Swing closes January 1st. It'd make a great daytime outing through the holidays, and will be open most of the holidays. And it is an amazing exhibit featuring the work of this American modernist. And there's so many highlights in the show. One particular area that I really love is the 1930s era, where he's really taking these flat, two-dimensional landscapes and just filling them with color and vibrancy, things like a summer landscape or a landscape with garage lights or the New York mural from the mid-30s. These are just bursting with energy, and they're just some amazing, amazing pieces.
The 30s are a fascinating time in Davis's life. Like many artists, he worked with the WPA, the Artist Worker Program, and he actually was not producing art at as high a rate as he would in later decades on account of the fact that he was very involved in workers and artists, particularly rights, and in politics. He was really an activist for artists, workers. And yet his paintings throughout his life are incredibly vibrant, incredibly happy, and they are always improvisations or new ways of creating a composition around things that were part of his everyday life. So Gloucester, Massachusetts, where he spent most summers, is the actual locale of the landscapes that you were just referring to. Instead of painting the bucolic setting of the sea and the charming lighthouse there, Davis chose to paint the bustling port and harbor. And so that's how he includes his commitment to everyday life, which even very much appears in his paintings of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, early 60s, where he is bringing elements that you can recognize as part of most of our everyday lives, even as the paintings become more flat, even more colorful, and more geometric in their composition.
Geometric and also almost chaotic in some cases. In the 40s, he, in the exhibit, notes this, that he loses his central focal point, where the whole canvas is just alive with activity. And they're really stunning pieces.
In the 1940s, Davis was really thinking about how he could take the work of the 30s and continue to make art that was appropriate for its own time. That's something that Davis was very conscious of, is that he did not want to have art that seemed to be retrospective, but always of the moment and even looking forward. And he chose to do a very interesting thing. He was really becoming more interested in creating a philosophy or theory about art. And in the paintings of the 40s, of which there are not a terribly high number, he was responding to his art theories that he was developing around form, color, design, and also the great trauma of the first half of the 1940s, which was World War II. So this mix of chaos on the one hand and an art theory that really had a lot of structure and order to it, you see Davis taking shapes and colors from earlier works that he had created and arranging them in new ways to both honor the chaos of the world, but also, as he said himself, his painting helped him make sense and order of the world for himself, and he hoped that his art would do that for others.
My guest today is Margie Conrads of Crystal Bridges Museum. Crystal Bridges is currently showing Stuart Davis in Full Swing, which closes January 1st. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. It's a major retrospective of the work of this American modernist painter. And once the war is over, and there's several important works that are in this post-war period where you see Davis taking what a lot of people consider the heyday of American advertising and utilizing that in his artwork. Three big canvases that are part of this are part of his Champions series, which I assume alludes to the spark plugs. Is that what people believe about those particular canvases?
The Champions series actually has several touch points, and the use of words, and this is where Davis can really be seen as a precursor to artists that use words in the 50s, 60s. He had looked at popular culture and advertising as early as the late teens and early 20s, where he would use a pack of Lucky Strike cigarettes, for example. As he moves into the 1950s, which was a wonderful decade for Davis, he was happy in his personal life. He also had greater success with his art, so he found a greater ease of life than he had had before. So the roots of the Champion series definitely comes from the design of the Champion spark plug packaging and ads, but there also has been suggested that it's a statement about how he was feeling at that moment, 1951, 1952, 53, where he was feeling probably more like he was on top of the world and a champion. And at the same time, there was a movie, a boxing movie with Kirk Douglas that was called The Champion, and Davis was a huge boxing fan. So the connection with the movie is also very likely.
Yeah. When he's using advertisement fragments, is he critiquing advertising, or is it more an homage to how incubated Americans are to having advertising in their life?
I think he is both using the advertising, the power of advertising, and its graphic nature and the power of that. He understood that, and he understood how successful that could be. So the positive side of the power of advertising. At the same time, one can take into consideration that he was recognizing just how ubiquitous advertising was and how the world was becoming, and particularly the United States, increasingly materialistic, and that is something that he thought about deeply.
Of course, in the last couple rooms of the exhibition, you see these very iconic Stuart Davis pieces, which, you know, they've almost become cliche because they were so, they've been so copied and used in various other forms. Things like something on the cue ball and some of the advertising related pieces in the 1950s. These are really groundbreaking pieces, and he's reacting to abstract expressionism in his own way.
Davis painted with his studio windows open so that he could hear and smell the city, New York City, that is, which is where he lived for the majority of his life. And he was always out and about, walking around. He watched TV, so he was incredibly aware of the many different facets of American culture. And he used them to his benefit in his art. And Davis was very aware of the rising artists like Jackson Pollock, Willem de Kooning, who actually he was very good friends with, but those artists who would be put in the abstract expressionist camp. That was not for Davis, because as I mentioned earlier, he always thought of his art as being rooted in the actual experience of American life. And so he was working differently than the abstract expressionists. And one thing about Davis's art, in his quest for creating art that was uniquely American, Davis chose a methodology and an attitude towards subject and painting that will never be mistaken for any other artist's work. Davis's art never really gets confused, as perhaps other groups of artists might. It is always very distinctive. And in his thinking about what was the right constellation of factors for American art, he went more to those characteristics or intangibles, even if you will, that spoke as being uniquely American. So it was about, you know, having an individual style. It was about uniqueness, about using many of those words that are often related to the American character. And that ties as well to his great love of the work of the poet Walt Whitman. Mm. And he did, I would say, in addition to all of the art that Davis, and he was omnivorous in his interest in art, the poetry of Walt Whitman and jazz in his lifetime were probably two of the biggest influences.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, Davis's work is very singular, but what you do see in his work, when you think of other artists that would come later, you can see their work, the germs in some of Davis's work. I'm especially thinking of like pop artists from the 1960s. They took actual objects, but Davis took stylized versions of these objects and created his own world, and yet the pop artists would borrow a lot of his painterly language to create art that more accurately represented this popular culture that would become pop art.
You're so right, Rich, in that if we think of the antecedents or some of the antecedents of Davis's work, you can see how he pulls threads of Picasso and Matisse forward. And then his own work provides a foundation for artists, say, like Warhol and the other pop artists of, as you say, you know, the 60, late 50s through the 60s.
Well, it's an amazing exhibit, and I imagine it's been a real joy to be working on it through the fall.
It has been wonderful to have here at Crystal Bridges. We are grateful to our colleagues at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York and the National Gallery in Washington who organized the exhibition, and we're just thrilled to bring it to the region around Northwest Arkansas and out into Oklahoma, Missouri, and our environs. So thank you for being interested in the exhibition and for this conversation.
Margie, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Margie Conrads is the Director of Curatorial Affairs at the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, Arkansas. The museum is featuring Stuart Davis's In Full Swing through January 1st. For more information on the exhibit and holiday hours, visit crystalbridges.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today and for the rest of this year. We'll be featuring holiday specials and the best of Studio Tulsa through the end of 2017. We want to thank you for listening all year long, and we're going to leave you with music from the companion disc to the exhibition called In Full Swing, featuring vintage jazz music. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Have a great holiday season.